to receive a lifetime ban from breeding dogs or cats for sale. The ban was issued on July 14th after the two pled guilty to 8 counts each under the Ontario SPCA Act. The charges were laid following the rescue of 63 dogs, 6 cats, and 7 chickens in Bruce County last December. The various charges included confining dogs in an enclosure with unsanitary conditions and confining dogs in an enclosure with inadequate ventilation. McEwen and Poliquin also received a 3-year probation, which includes prohibition from owning or possessing any animals and fines of $3,000 and $1,500, respectively. This lifetime ban shows the seriousness with which these operations will be dealt with under the amended Ontario SPCA Act, says Mike Draper, Chief Inspector of the Ontario SPCA. It sends a strong message to puppy and kitten mill operators. By taking away their ability to possess and or breed cats and dogs, we are effectively stopping them from cruelly using these innocent animals for profit without concern for their well-being. Next, from the BBC, the biggest crackdown on animal cruelty for nearly a century has been unveiled by the UK government. It will allow RSPCA inspectors to intervene earlier when there is a risk of cruelty and raise maximum sentences for such offences. Funfairs will no longer be able to give animals, including goldfish, as prizes, children under 16 will be banned from buying a pet, and cosmetic docking of dogs' tails will be outlawed. Up to now, laws on animal cruelty, dating back to 1911, have said evidence that a pet has experienced physical suffering must be gained before legal action can be taken. Under the new law, owners will be given a duty of care. This means the RSPCA can intervene when an animal is being kept in conditions likely to lead to suffering, closing what many see as a serious loophole. Maximum penalties will be increased from a 6-month jail term and a £5,000 fine to a 51-week prison sentence and a £20,000 fine. The bill also allows the Environment Secretary to make regulations relating to the welfare of animals used in entertainment. The RSPCA hopes these provisions will be used to ban the use of animals in circuses, which, due to their transient nature, cannot guarantee an ongoing high standard of care. Hopefully Canada will match or even improve upon the UK's standards sometime soon. And this morning, Planet Ark reports that Japan lost the first battle in a war to turn back years of anti-hunting agreements at the International Whaling Commission yesterday, when countries rejected its motion to hold votes in secret. Conservation groups, which accused Japan of enticing developing countries to join the body and vote with it, welcomed the outcome, which indicated the majority of the 57 members were still largely opposed to whaling. The Independent out of the UK predicted that Japan, Norway, and Iceland, all still hunting the great whales in defiance of the 18-year international moratorium on their killing, were on course to gain control of more than 50% of the votes at the 2004 IWC, which began in Italy yesterday. The three countries together have killed more than 25,000 whales since the 1986 ban started. The public face of Japan's pro-whaling lobby, Masayuki Komatsu, once advised the captains of whaling ships to, quote, blow Greenpeace protest boats out of the water, end quote, and regularly denounces what he calls the culinary imperialism of the West. Mr. Komatsu, who boasts the misleading title of Director of Fisheries Research and Environmental Protection, has argued for years that whale numbers have increased to the point where they can safely be hunted again, and that if not controlled, they eat other fish because they are the cockroaches of the sea. But the BBC reports that Dr. Danielle Pauly of the U of BC says Japan is wrong to blame whales and other marine mammals for reducing fish stocks. Arguing that whales eat fish which could feed the world's hungry people is, quote, cynical and irresponsible, he said. What whales consume is largely stuff that we do not catch in areas where we do not fish. One Tokyo resident said, when I hear people say they don't eat whale, I feel sorry for them. It's delicious. The problem is people are too sentimental about them. I think they're cute too, but so are cows, and that doesn't stop Westerners eating beef, does it? Showing that while they don't care a bit about animal life or the planet, their biggest concern apparently is consistency. Go figure. The Independent also reported that animal rights protesters yesterday claimed victory after Montpellier pulled out of its contract to build a controversial vivisection laboratory at Oxford University. The company's subsidiary, Walter Lilly, is abandoning work on the project after a campaign of pressure from activists, including hoax letters to shareholders urging them to sell out, which has pushed shares down to their lowest level in 4 years. The university last night said it had already made alternative plans, which it would not be making public, and that building work would continue uninterrupted. But Speak, the group which is coordinating opposition to the laboratory, promised to root out the names of companies involved in the work. Robert Cogswell, a spokesman for the group, said, "We are delighted that Montpellier has made an ethical decision based on the information we provided to them about what is to take place in the labs rather than one based on profit." Speak is backing a legal campaign of protest, which included a 48-hour hunger strike by an 85-year-old anti-vivisectionist last week, and is organizing a march through Oxford this Saturday. Leading academics and drug industry figures warned that the setback must not be allowed to disrupt the £18 million project. They fear a repeat of last year's victory for the animal rights protesters when plans for a similar animal testing center at Cambridge University were abandoned because of the spiraling costs of security. So look at all the AR people on the move around the world. Very inspiring stories.
Thanks, Rob.
Over Rob, to you, Lauren.
How do you choose between all the hundreds of emails that you get about animal rights-related news?
Sometimes, really, it's about what interests me. Sometimes it's about, I guess, a trend in what's going on. Plus, the amounts of emails I get on a particular topic and what people are talking about during the week to see what's sort of on people's minds.
The buzz.
The buzz, exactly. I listen to the buzz. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing that I feel totally overwhelmed when I look at my inbox and there's, you know, 200 stories about animal stuff going on around the world. So I think it's pretty cool that you can pull it all together with a theme nonetheless. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5, the University of Toronto Community Radio Station. And today's program, we're going to be speaking about relationships within the context of being vegetarian and perhaps having a partner who is not vegetarian, how to negotiate that. And so we're going to be joined today with Jo Stepaniak, and she's just this incredible educator, author, and she's written about this topic before on her website or on VegSource, where people can write in and share their comments and ask her questions about the vegan lifestyle and how to, you know, go through some of the troubled waters that sometimes that this particular ethical position in the world can create. So I'm really excited to have her on the program. We're also going to be sharing some of our listener comments in the later portion of the show, but I wanted to welcome Jo to the program.
Yes, hi.
Hi, thanks, Jo, for being on.
Oh, you're welcome, Lauren. Thanks.
I gave a little brief introduction to who you are, but maybe if you want to personally say hello to everybody and to give people a sense of what you've been working on lately, that would be great.
Well, hello, Toronto. I have been, recently just came out with the 10th anniversary edition of the Uncheese Cookbook called The Ultimate Uncheese Cookbook. And last year came out with the book Raising Vegetarian Children for parents who have vegetarian children, whether or not they are vegetarian themselves. And currently working on a food allergy book with two other authors that will be out late August.
What's a food allergy book?
For people who have food allergies and sensitivities, and it's completely vegan. And how they can deal with that and get all the nutrients they need and still have delicious recipes while avoiding all the things that they're unable to have.
I really envision you as someone in the movement who is sort of a frontline worker for people. You're really trying to make, seems like you're trying to make the transition for people who want to live vegan and try to practice that as an ethical lifestyle. You try to facilitate that shift or being able to maintain that lifestyle.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That is what I try to do.
Yeah. And you're involved with VegSource. Can you give us a sense of what that is all about, that VegSource.com?
VegSource is the leading vegetarian site on the web, and they are affiliated with pretty much all of the top names in the vegetarian and vegan movements and the AR movement. They host a number of AR sites, and some of the most well-known and beloved physicians and specialists in the vegan, vegetarian, and AR movements.
I mean, this site is just incredible, and one of the things that struck me is that there's really an opportunity to interact with the different people who contribute to the site, the so-called experts. I know probably a lot of people on that site would shy away from that term, but people who have a lot of knowledge that can contribute for people's questions. And you also have your own sort of separate website that's affiliated with that, and people can send you in questions. And I was just wondering about sort of some of the themes that you get, some of the questions that you get, and what are some of the most prominent questions. And of course, today we wanted to talk about veg and non-veg relationships. But what are some of the main concerns people are writing you about?
It is all across the board. A lot of the questions I get are regarding relationships.
Hmm.
That's really the bulk of the questions that I've received. I've been having the Ask Joe format for about 6 years. I've heard from people from all around the world in places that sometimes amaze me that people even know the word vegan.
Mm.
But a lot of times the questions deal with relationships, and it can be relationships with a romantic partner, it can be relationships with friends, with family members, with professors, coworkers, any kind of relationship. And that seems to be the most challenging aspect for people of being vegan and vegetarian. Of course, I hear other questions,
right,
too, some related to food issues, some related to ethics and philosophy. So they sort of balance out, but I would say the majority are about relationships.
And so, Joe, why do you think that is? Why is it so difficult for people to negotiate relationships with their non-vegan friends and partners?
I read something just yesterday that I thought was pretty fascinating. It was a quote regarding what didn't have anything to do with vegetarianism or veganism, but it had to do with changing one's diet. And it was by a dietitian assisting people with losing weight. And she said that it's easier for people to learn a foreign language than it is for them to change their diet.
Mm.
And I think we just have an emotional connection to our food, regardless of what the reason is, why we eat what we eat. We have an emotional connection to it. And it becomes almost a personal attack when someone tries to change our diet when it isn't our choice.
I mean, one of the things that always strikes me too is if you speak with people sometimes about veganism in particular, but vegetarianism as well, even just to talk about these issues, you know, if you talk about battery cages or gestation crates for pigs, that people will say, you know, stop trying to shove your message down my throat. Even if you try to bring up these issues in a really non-confrontational way, just try to information share, that it does get read as being like, you're saying that I'm bad somehow, you're saying that I should feel guilty, even if that's not the import of the message.
Absolutely. I have been vegetarian for over 40 years, and I still get that. I still get that when people say, oh, are you a vegetarian? And I go, yes. Or if they say, you know, why aren't you eating this or that? I go, well, I'm a vegetarian. And without even saying vegan, people get defensive. They go, oh, well, I went through that once, or it was just a phase for me, or, well, I don't eat that much red meat. Still, after all these years, I hear the same thing. So some things, I guess, never change.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's almost an id response. Like the diet and the things we put into our mouths is such a connected to our id,
mm-hmm.
if I can be Freudian for a moment.
Please.
And that if we're threatened with that being taken away from us, it's such a, I guess, a fight or flight response almost, that it's so basic to who we are, the things that we put in our mouths and nourish ourselves, and the taste and everything that it does to us, the sensualness, the sensuality of food and what it is to our culture, that if people show us what we might not agree with in terms of animal cruelty, then we just get scared and defensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because people don't want to change. Very
mm-hmm.
few of us enjoy change. We like things to be comfortable and consistent and familiar. And it is threatening when we have to think about things we would prefer not to, because if we think about them, that might mean we'll need to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of questions are you getting from the people around the world about their relationships?
A lot of people, I think the biggest crisis happens when someone is in a relationship that didn't start out between two vegetarians and one person decides to become vegetarian. and their eyes are open to so many new issues and so many new concerns, and their partner can't see it, and their partner doesn't want to change. There's a real roadblock there, especially when it's not just a matter of eating, but when ethics go much deeper than just what's on your plate.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody has decided to become vegan and their ethical commitment has become very deep and their partner isn't willing to change, or their partner wants to bring meat into the house, there's a lot of frustration and battling for individual rights in the household, especially when people live together. It can happen, though, even when two people are just dating.
So what suggestions do you give people, or do you have any advice or ideas?
It varies from situation to situation, and it comes down to really how much someone values the relationship and what is more important. Are they willing to bend at all to maintain the relationship, or are their ethics so important to them that they need to find a partner that shares their same values? So it really depends. It varies from situation to situation. But what I have learned through my own experience and through working with other people, that you cannot force a value change on someone else. And we cannot force them to change their behavior. We take away their freedom by doing that.
Mm.
And the only way that someone is going to really make a deep and lasting commitment to veganism or vegetarianism is when it's their own choice, not because they're doing it for their partner.
And have you gone through the same thing as well? Can I get personal here, Joe?
Well, I've been married for 25 years.
Whoa.
Okay.
But when I met my husband, he was not a vegetarian. That was a long time ago, and I had been a vegetarian for a long while when he and I met. He didn't know any other vegetarians, and it was a whole new world for him. It was very eye-opening for him to be with someone who was vegetarian. This was back in the 70s. Things were a little different then. Times were a little different. I think we went through periods in North America where vegetarianism was more accepted in some ways then than it was in the 80s and 90s. But when he and I decided to get married, I said to him, it's fine. If you want to eat meat, that's your choice. But I don't want it in my house. And he was willing to go along with that. And his response was, well, if I decide to become vegetarian, if I ever decide to become vegetarian, it has to be because it's my decision. And I said, okay. And I realized I had to back off pushing him in any direction or he was going to rebel
mm-hmm.
and go further and deeper into meat eating. So I did. I backed off. And we decided to get married. And 6 months later, let's see, we decided to get married 3 months after we met. Three months after we made that decision, we got married. And by that time, within a three-month period, he decided to become vegetarian, and it was his choice.
Hmm.
And he was very committed, and then 2 years later, we both went vegan together.
Isn't that nice?
So there can be happy endings when you date a meat eater.
Is there ever unhappy endings? Have you heard about people not being able to work out this issue?
Yes, definitely. I think it is different if a couple is dating and one person is vegetarian and one person is not, and they know that going into the relationship. What becomes difficult is when one person makes a dramatic change after the relationship has a strong hold, and that becomes threatening to the other person, and it can often come down to a decision of what's more important, this relationship and compromising my values, or finding someone that shares them with me on equal ground.
I wanted to see if we could get one of our listeners on the phone, and she's going to share her thoughts on dating a non-meat eater. So we're going to try to get her on the line.
Okay,
right
great.
Now. But in the meantime, if I could just ask you another question. Do you find, because this is something that I guess a lot of people have said to me, and I'm wondering if you find these analogies worthwhile. People will say sometimes, you know, I wouldn't date a meat eater because it's like dating a racist or it's dating someone who's sexist. Can you comment on that? Do you think that these sort of analogies are useful, not useful as a strategy? Have people said things like that to you before?
I've heard that, but and I've got a lot of thoughts about that. Being sexist or being racist defines one aspect of a person. And often, if we are willing to open our hearts and minds to people, no matter how repugnant we think parts of them may be, we may discover other parts that are truly wonderful and beautiful and amazing. And that's one reason I don't like to label people. Vegan and vegetarian is not a label. It's a description. It defines our behavior. It defines a philosophy and an ethical practice that infuses all areas of our lives. And that's the primary difference, because we could be a vegetarian racist and we could be a vegetarian sexist. Those terms are just looking at one element, and it also isn't acknowledging that that element can change. So I don't like to box people in, because then we don't give them the room to change and grow.
Right, it gives them more of an opportunity to try new things if you don't close off the possibility right away.
Right, and if we look for those beautiful aspects of them and we learn how to relate and appreciate those parts of them, they might be more open to hearing what we have to say once we've established a relationship that's loving and respectful on all levels. When we start judging other people, we start closing off their options and our options to reach them. It's a difficult practice, but I personally believe that that is inherent in the true practice of veganism. If we believe in compassion for all life, we also must be compassionate towards our fellow human beings, even those that we find ugly or offensive on various levels. I also feel that hatred and anger conflict with true vegan values, and that when we feel those emotions arising in us, that's something that we need to look at as part of our practice as being vegan.
Do you think the goal is to try to get rid of the anger, or do you feel like that can be useful sometimes? What do you suggest for people who are feeling that kind of anger?
I've seen a lot of anger. Sometimes I think it's misplaced. Sometimes I think angry people are drawn to social movements as a way to finding somewhere to put that anger and express it. I also see anger, of course, and outrage from people who are just incensed about the horrors that animals go through in every layer of our culture. And both forms of anger need to be looked at. If we force anger away, again, we're creating another struggle and we're not really taking a look at why we're angry and what we can do with that energy of anger and how we can embrace it. We can't really transform it unless we stop to acknowledge that we're angry and own up to it and realize that it might be creating an obstacle for us in our relationships, in our own mental and emotional health, in our physical health, in our ability to help the animals. If we can transform that anger into productive action and compassionate caring, then it can be useful.
Joe, listening to you is so relaxing. Well, we're sitting here in the studio. Everyone's looking very zen right now. But thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. We come back to anger as a theme on this program, I think, quite a bit. You know, what to do with that, how to stay centered and compassionate when you're dealing with looking at such horrible things on a pretty regular basis if you're involved with this movement. I think we have one of our listeners on the line, and we're going to try to get you both on at the same time. So, Lisa, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm just listening.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Oh, this is so good. This is a moment on Animal Voices when we can have two people on the phone.
It's the first.
So Lisa, you wrote us a really great letter, and instead of reading it all out, I thought maybe I would just get you to share your thoughts on this topic about being a vegetarian and your experience with non-vegetarians, meat eaters, and relationships.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been an animal rights activist for 21 years. I'm 40 years old. And in the process, like I said in my email, I was a meat eater up until 2 years ago. So now that I've given it up, I'm in a different mindset, like I'm in a totally different place from people that do eat meat. And it's hard for me because I have to try to remember, well, I ate it for 38 years, right? But when I see people eat it now, like, I mean, tears come to my eyes and everything. I'm like, how can you order that? How can you do it? This is what's going through my mind. People that are close to me know my reaction because they can just go see the look on my face, right? But it is hard. It's really difficult because, like I said, I have to remember that I did participate in that for a long time myself. I'm not saying at this point I'm any better than anybody else because I'm not. I'm not at all, but you're just in a totally different headspace.
Why did you decide to go vegetarian then after so many years and being involved with the movement for so long? What brought you to the other side?
Isn't that crazy, right? I know, that's nuts. And I don't know if I put in my email, but I've been to slaughterhouses. And I've been to fur farms and chickenries and piggeries, the whole bit. And I went truck driving in 92. And actually, it was a mistake. We were delivering produce, and the refrigeration broke in the cab of the truck. So to salvage the trip, we were gone for 3 months. We went to the slaughterhouses in the U.S. and Canada. And needless to say, I gave up eating it that summer because I was so sickened by the process that I didn't eat anything for 3 months. I came back like 15, 20 pounds lighter, right? I tell you, I think a lot of it was just reinforcement from my family and my friends. Oh, let's go ahead and steak, blah, 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 blah. So what really did it for me was, one night I'm a hairdresser, right, and I was doing my client, and she was telling me about this program she saw, and I thought, you know what, Lisa, you're being totally stupid. You can't be an animal rights activist, and this is just dumb. I came home, I said to my husband, this is it, we're not doing it anymore. He thought I needed a shrink, right? He's like, oh, my God, you can't be serious. I said, yeah, I am. And since you don't cook, and you don't cook at all, the hospital's right down the street, so when you want to die of starvation, go down there and they'll pump you up. Because I'm not doing it anymore, right? That's what I said to him.
And okay, so this brings us to the topic of the show, which is negotiating vegetarian and non-vegetarian relationships. You sound like you're quite assertive.
You actually didn't negotiate it at all.
There was no negotiation.
This is what we're doing, and you're going to live with it.
Okay, so your husband, he thinks that you need to see a psychiatrist, and then what happened?
Well, I told him he needed to go see a shrink because it's not going to work.
Right, so communication was happening.
Communication was beautiful.
Right.
But I'm very supportive of my husband and business ventures that he does, so that was my leverage. I said, listen, you know what? I put up with your craziness now for like 8 years, so the least you can do is give me some sort of leeway here. And my husband's not big on nutrition either. Like, I did competitive bodybuilding, and I've been in and out of university as well for the past 15 years, taking nutritional courses. I know that the cancer risks are accelerated amongst meat eaters. Certain types of cancer, not every cancer, but a lot of diseases and disorders we put upon ourselves through the foods that we choose to eat. But again, I was getting reinforcement from my family because they're Italian and blah, 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 and all this stuff. So I'm like, well, whatever, that's the boat. You know, you can all get sick and go to the hospital. I'm not going to meet you there. You know what I mean? So it was the health risk on top of the fact that this lady was telling me this story, and it was just something, I think it was the tears in her eyes, the look on her face, that said, you know what, I got to do this, and I'm going to do it, and if my husband doesn't like it, oh well, because I've supported him enough in his other ventures. So it was a trade-off. But now that I showed him Meet Your Meat, right?
Okay, which is, it's a video by PETA, which is sort of an introduction to factory farming and slaughterhouses.
Right. So my husband doesn't drink, but anyway, he was hungover this one particular morning. So he watched the video, and he's like, he came out so stone cold white in the face.
Right.
And he said his knees were weak.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, maybe it's because I'm not feeling so good because I was out last night. I said, well, maybe so. Watch it again. Well, 2 weeks later, he had the same gut reaction. So based on that, he's been a lot more compassionate towards the situation. He was very naive to what took place. He didn't understand the process of how the food gets to the plate. And he knows nothing about nutrition. I mean, my husband will go order hamburgers and french fries and put sour cream on them, girlfriend. You know what I mean? That was like, you know.
He's coming from a very different place. I've never heard that before about someone thinking that they were having a reaction to an animal rights video because they might be hungover.
That was his take on it because I don't think he wanted to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just hungover today, so I can't watch it. I'm getting sick so much.
Yeah.
So that's what he put it down as the first time. The second time he realized, no, it's an emotional reaction to what he saw.
So did he become vegetarian?
Well, he had no choice in my house. Yeah.
Joe, this is so different than what I was expecting. Lisa, I wanted to just stop you for a minute, but thank you for being on the program and sharing your thoughts. I wanted to read a couple of different responses that we got to this topic when we put a shout out for people to write in and share their ideas. So this is from a friend of mine, and her name is Brandy, and this is her email to me, and I thought it was quite cute. She said, I think that dating meat eaters is the best way to further the vegan revolution! Picture it. Cute veggie girl meets other cute non-veggie girl. Non-veggie girl thinks that the veggie girl is so fine. Though she is afraid to try the new tofu dish that veggie girl cooks for her, one day she, wanting to impress her, courageously puts a forkful of the tofu loaf with the tofu stuffing and the tofu gravy into her mouth. Shock of the pleasant variety follows. Who knew that veggie food could taste this good? Thanks, non-veggie girl. Non-veggie girl appreciates how firm the veggie girl is in her beliefs, unwavering and strong. Long, compelling conversations are plentiful on the topic of animals and veganism. Non-veggie girl, after several weeks, decides to go vegetarian, and they live happily ever after in vegan bliss. As the saying goes, revolution begins in the bedroom. And so that was my friend Brandy's comments, and she also said that Living Among Meat Eaters by Carol Adams has a section that talks about non-veg partners and some ways to negotiate that. So that's one more letter. Joe, you've heard from Lisa, you've heard from my friend Brandy. Any thoughts at this point that you also wanted to share about this topic? Lisa had a different approach.
Yeah. I know, I can't help it. It just got to me so bad, and I know that I supported him before in so many other topics, that I felt for once he needed to support me in something, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a strong relationship is all about. And I think that even if your husband had not become vegetarian, Lisa, at least he would have, and you would have insisted, that he support you in your decision to be vegetarian. That's usually the most difficult situation when somebody has been non-vegetarian for the vast majority of their life and their relationship, and then suddenly they change, they see the light. In the other scenario with Brandy, what's cool about that is that she meets a potential partner, and the potential partner knows right off that she's vegan. And that sets up a completely different scenario, because the potential partner knows right off this is what she's getting into. This is what she's going to be exposed to. And can they both deal with this? And in both situations, though, the partners were open. The partners were interested. Their hearts and their minds were open. If they hadn't been, and if the vegan partner had sort of banged on the door of their heart and said, let me in or else, probably the other person's heart would have hardened rather than softened and opened.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, I know this topic has ruined some marriages. Absolutely. My girlfriend actually is getting a separation because of this issue.
Because she's vegetarian and her husband is not.
I don't know if it's just the icing on the cake for them. I can't really say that for sure. I know they had a few minor things here and there, nothing major. But like I said in my email, if you can, it's really hard because it's a different mindset. You know, and I see my friends differently now, too, because they all call themselves animal lovers. Well, don't call me up telling me about this cat. We had some serious cat problems down here in Nova Scotia recently. Some cats are being tortured all the time. When you're going to sit down and eat a steak, as you're telling me. And this is what I bring to my friend's attention now, right? So They're kind of like, yeah, I guess you're right. And then they don't really say too much. And I'm not trying to take away from the animal that's been abused, but that's what gets in the paper. What doesn't get in the paper is how many steaks were consumed in the run of the day and all this other stuff, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the topic of conversation big time. And then, like I said, when I draw to their attention, but you're wearing a leather jacket. And I had leather, too. I did, and I wore real fur when I was in my teenage years. My mom was really cool. We both had fur coats, and she was the one that brought to my attention how badly the animals were treated in the fur industry. I think I was 18 or 19.
Well, it's amazing how many of us didn't connect the dots. We just didn't. I had been vegetarian for a long while as a young girl, and I too wore leather shoes, and I had a leather purse, and I had a leather jacket. And one day my sister, who was extremely anti-vegetarian and used to mock me about everything, commented about it. And it was eye-opening. She saw something that I couldn't. And it was at that point that my vegan heart started to bloom, started to grow. But it's also, I think, helpful for us when we're dealing with people who are not vegetarian, or if we're vegan and they're vegetarian but not vegan, and they think that what we are is just too radical, too extreme. It's helpful for us to remember there was a time we didn't connect with God. And what was it that made us see things differently? And can we show empathy to that person? Can we understand where they're at without forcing them to be like us, with allowing them to change at their own pace, their own rate, and have this be a decision they can own?
And Joe, I think Lisa brought up a good point in terms of showing her husband the video, because he was admittedly rather naive about what goes on. And I think that's something a lot of people can do, is show their non-vegan partners videos and just give them research and try to educate them so they can understand where they're coming from. But it's difficult when people see that and then they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can picture myself being with a meat eater who eventually, through research and education, sees the vegan light, I guess, so to speak. But to be with someone who knows what goes on and then doesn't care, I don't know how I would deal with that.
This is another theme in this program, is that, what to do when you feel that you've, in the most compassionate way possible with your friends and family, try to show them what's going on, and then they look at what's going on and they say, yeah, it's horrible, but it doesn't really affect me, or it doesn't really matter to me, or I don't really care about it that much. And you might be able to educate people about sort of concrete factoids, but or show them pictures, but not necessarily be able to open their heart. And that it's very difficult sometimes to continue to connect with people who you feel don't care. Do you have any suggestions about how to continue to connect and respect them?
It comes down to acceptance, that people are not good or bad. We all have things that we are working with, evolving with. It's not a black and white issue. The people who eat meat are not horrible people. There have been slaughterhouse workers and cattle ranchers who have become vegan, who seemed like the most hopeless cases. And there are people who are highly educated and you think they would know better, and they are terribly resistant. Again, I feel if we close our hearts off to those people and write them off as, well, there's no point in having a relationship with them, it's very too hard for me to be around them, we will miss an opportunity just by our example of kindness and compassion to possibly influence them, to show them with our actions and not our words, without making it an intellectual exercise and without berating them, showing compassion by giving compassion to those that are very difficult for us to love and care about.
Mm.
I recently, I guess it's actually been probably close to a year, there was a woman that I do some mediation work with. She's a co-mediator. And she was asking me one day why I'm a vegetarian, and, gee, you know, the cows aren't herd, why don't you have milk? And so I said, well, there's a video I'd like you to see. So I gave her the witness, because I thought it would be a nice, easy way for her to sort of understand. And she's had the video for about a year, and I saw her just this past week. And she said, oh, I really have to get that back to you. Now, she's in her mid-70s. She told me, well, you know, I've stopped eating veal, and I really don't eat much beef at all anymore. And I figure, you know, she's a loving person. She's making the changes the best she can at this stage of her life. And I'm just accepting her and accepting the good parts of her, which are many, and trying to embrace the parts of her that are difficult for me to embrace. Even those small steps are big steps, I think, especially for someone who's been ingrained in meat eating for 75 years.
I remember going and hearing Ray Sikora and Zoe Weil talk about the humane education stuff that they'd been doing, and I think someone had come up to them during one of their sessions and said, you know, later, do you think I'm a horrible person because I eat meat? And Ray, being Ray, amazing, said, you know, I'm sure there's things in my life that I could be more compassionate about and that I'm not, and that you probably do that I don't. And I thought, wow, I think she just really articulated how we're all journeying in different places and we'll always learn something new. I wanted to read a couple more letters. This one's from my mom, and my stepfather is not a vegetarian, and she's vegetarian, and so she says this. Hi, sweetie, here's my comment. It's not hard to forgive my husband for eating meat. Of course, the animals he consumes might have a harder time. I have to live by one life, one mouth, which means that I only get to decide what I say and do with mine. The truth is, we can only control our own choices, but I do still cling to hope and example. So that was from my mom.
You've got a very wise mother.
She really is. A lot of this to me, I mean, this conversation, I know it doesn't necessarily have to come from the spiritual tradition, but it seems to resonate with a lot of Buddhist spirituality in terms of letting go and just taking responsibility for your own actions and staying centered in that. It just seems like there's some similarities between an articulation that you have of veganism and Buddhism as well. My mom comes from that perspective.
And that is the perspective I come
from. Yeah.
Can I ask, Lauren, so is there meat in her house?
Yeah, there is.
And how does she deal with that? How does she negotiate
Well,
that?
There's two things that I actually wanted to say, because I think so far, I think I walked into this program thinking about relationships in a romantic context, and I just wanted to say for people who are listening who might be vegetarian or meat eaters or whatever, that if you extend some compassion to your vegan or vegetarian friends, for example, when I go home, we have a vegan Christmas, even though there's meat in the house, it means so much to me. Or if I go to a potluck where there will be other people there and the host goes out of their way to make sure that there's something that I can eat there, I feel so touched. So there's things that you can do too, just to go the other way as well. So I wanted to throw that out there as just a possibility for people too. But in terms of my mom, yeah, there is meat in the house. I think that, you know, in terms of what Joe was saying, that they got into a relationship when my mom was a meat eater, and that it wasn't that she was vegetarian right off the bat. And she sort of transitioned as I've told her more about things and she's learned about things on her own. But they're always kind of in Tupperware containers. Like when I go home, there might be hot dogs, but they're like in a sealed container at the back of the fridge. And my stepfather, I mean, he's just a glorious human being. And when I go home to my small town, you know, he's calling to me across the grocery store, you know, I found another soup that's vegan, you know, and he's so excited, and he's been extremely supportive of me. And I feel like his own issues that he brings with food are so loaded in terms of coming from a background where they didn't have a lot of money, and that food really is comfort to him. And I feel like I respect where he's at, and he's just so kind to me about the choices that I've made, and that I feel like I can't get down on him, and I don't want to make my time at home be like difficult. But I think my mom just encourages him to eat well and be healthy, and she cooks for him when she can, and vice versa. And every time I come home, I just bring like a truckload of fake meat, and he's always willing to try new things. So I think she just negotiates it by putting things in Tupperware. She doesn't have to see it a lot.
You bring up a really good point, Lauren. Your stepfather and your mother have a very respectful relationship, and they're supportive of each other, and they see the beautiful aspects of each other beyond the things that they disagree with. And they've learned how to negotiate it beautifully. And I, of course, agree with Ray's comment that I do think when vegans or vegetarians get angry and get furious and frustrated with meat eaters and speak out in angry tones and say they can't understand why they can't get it, and we're talking about compassion in the same breath, it's important to realize what an oxymoron we have become when we do that. In order to really live vegan values, our compassion towards those that don't share the same values speaks volumes more than our words.
So living by example.
Exactly.
Lisa,
and showing, demonstrating compassion, not just feeling it, but also demonstrating it, and patience and understanding and respect, And like you, when people go out of their way, when people who are meat eaters go out of their way to make sure that I have something to eat when I'm visiting their house or going to a party or potluck, I'm overjoyed. I am deeply touched. I think it is wonderful, and I'm so appreciative. And if they have special needs, I, of course, want to do the same thing for them.
It is hard, though, when you show people the material, and, you know, I get comments like, oh, that doesn't happen everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, it's industry set standards. You can download it on any site you want to see. And when they choose to order a steak or a piece of chicken like 10 minutes after, yeah, that, it hurts my feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, geez, you know, like, after everything I've done to show you and try to let you know, but it's a slow process for some people. My husband was quite understanding about the fact that I had supported him immensely over 8 years in different business ventures, like giving up my time, my money, all my resources, right? So he was willing to give this a try because he knew I was really adamant about it. Plus, I do all the cooking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really have much of a choice. But now he's really happy with the decision. He feels great. He's lost weight. He feels better. He sleeps better at night. All these other health issues came into play for him as well, right?
Mm.
But we have a great supportive relationship of each other, and that's what's going to probably come down to for a lot of people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. this is one last letter here. It was quite short from Heather Ryerson. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. But she says, hi, my name is Heather, and I'm a vegetarian. My last relationship was with a meat eater. And she says, the best way to make it work is to not have meat in the house, and hopefully the meat eater has some respect for your lifestyle. My partner slowly but surely became a borderline vegetarian. I love these new terms we learned. Borderline. Vegetarian. When he would eat meat at family dinners after weeks of not having any at home, he would feel sick later on. I find it hard to meet other vegetarian and vegan men. It is still a female-dominated movement. Which brings me up to the question that Xanthra, who's our tech, wanted me to ask, and I think it's a really interesting one, about gender. Have you noticed that there is a difference in gender, or how does gender intersect with this particular issue? Are women more often writing in questions, or has the... I have found overall men have been more defensive, but maybe that's not true right across the board.
For me personally, well, we have a group here that has about probably 50, 60 people in a given moment. We have other people in our group that live outside of the province of Nova Scotia, so we do like conference calling and things like that, and I would say it's a 50-50 split at this time, but I don't know about the population in Nova Scotia, like I said, exactly what would be vegan female versus male stats on that.
Right. Well, Joe, what have you found with people writing in?
I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to gender, and sometimes I can't tell, because if I get a question from someone in another country and they speak a different language, sometimes I can't tell from their name whether they're male or female. So that's always interesting, too. I'd say it's probably maybe 60-40, 60% female, 40% male. Maybe the majority of the relationship questions are from women, especially when it comes to romantic relationships. When it's relationships with parents, it's probably 50-50.
Joe, we only have a couple more minutes left. I wanted to make sure that people could read more about this on your website. I mean, you have an incredible response to it's recently was posted, it looks like, on the website through VegSource, where you talk about this issue in particular and how to negotiate it. And I want to make sure people can access your material and write to you through that advice column. If you could give us that contact information and then any last thoughts that you might have, that would be super.
The site is www.vegsource.com/Joe, J-O, and we have an archives on the site and a whole column of questions related to relationships in the archives, also in philosophy and ethics, and a column about food issues as well. And for people who want to write in a question, I can't always provide a personal response, and sometimes the questions will end up in a column, but I do my best.
Mm-hmm. You can search the archives, which is great, too, if you have a question that might have already been answered.
Exactly. Yeah, we've really covered a lot of the most commonly asked questions in the archives. And there are also essays and articles on the site, too, that may answer questions that people have.
Joe, we have no time left, but I just wanted to give you like 10 seconds if you had anything else you wanted to share.
No, I just wish everyone a very beautiful and happy day,
okay.
And I've enjoyed being on the show so much.
Me too. I really hope we get to have you back on.
I find you
so inspiring and wonderful to listen to, and your work has been personally so beneficial to me, so I wanted to say thanks for that.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura.
You've been listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Our tech in studio today was Xanthra and Rob Moore doing the news, and Levi Waldron helping out with some technical problems. Please stay tuned for the next program.